market is always at the forefront of things. So there's always constant uncertainty. And so the thing that's changed is the uncertainty is now, well, how do I communicate in a world where everything is virtual? How do I communicate in a world where people are, you know, under stress, whether they're business buyers or consumer buyers? And how do I communicate in a world of, well, where my industry might be severely impacted?
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Marketing Cloudcast,
a podcast by Salesforce where trailblazers talk all things marketing.
I'm Megan Collins.
And I'm Tina Razul, host of the Marketing Cloudcast. On the show, you'll hear from industry thought leaders from around the world on key trends and relevant insights that span today's marketing landscape.
And if you like what you hear today, go ahead and subscribe and find more episodes on marketingcloudcast.com.
Hey everyone, hope you are staying safe and healthy wherever you are in the world. I am here in Australia where working from home is pretty much the new normal, but we're starting to ease restrictions and prepare this next phase of reopening businesses. And I'm sure something that's crossed everyone's mind is where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly crossed my mind. We're starting to get into this new phase, but something that has stayed tried and true is thinking as a marketer, as a communicator, as a brand ambassador, you name it. We have so many different roles in marketing, but how as marketers can we be more empathetic and understanding how do we collaborate with our colleagues when we're working from home? There's so many things top of mind. And one thing that Tina and I really love to do is take a look at this yearly report. It's actually the sixth report that Salesforce has put out called the State of Marketing. And in fact, it's covering insights and trends from nearly 7,000 marketing leaders who are leading through this change.
In this time where we are moving forward in business continuity, we seek advice and insight. So the dropping of the State of Marketing report is very, very timely. What's great is we have the wonderful Chris Jacob, who's joining us today on the show. He is our resident marketing insights extraordinaire. Chris, we gave you a new title.
I like that
who
title.
Who has been spearheading the creation of this report the last 3 years here at Salesforce. He is an Aussie turned New Yorker, former entrepreneur, author, and a really good friend of Megan and I. So we were very grateful that we got to sit down with him and discuss the report and really why this research, especially during this time, is so important to marketing.
Research involves data and involves real actual opinions out in market. And so it gets away from a lot of the subjectivity that goes on, which is obviously big in marketing. You know, people have a lot of opinions. But at least if you start from somewhere, like 40% of people like this, then you can then have a real conversation from that rather than just random opinions. So that's why I love it. Plus, you also get to meet people all over the place, all over the world. With this stuff, because you need to see what differs between different industries and different countries. And I find it very, very interesting.
So for our listeners that may not have heard the report or read it before, Chris, share with them, why is the State of Marketing report so important?
The cool thing about State of Marketing is, as far as Salesforce is concerned, is it's the pioneering research report that we do. It's the longest running one. From State of Marketing has come State of Sales and State of IT and State of Service, as well as other reports that focus on the end customer, like the Connected Customer report. It's in its sixth edition now, which is great. And it's our largest one yet, which we're very excited about, reaching just under 7,000 people around the world this year in terms of marketing leaders who contributed their opinions. Our largest by country, we had 28 countries plus Hong Kong in this one. And for the very, very first time, we went to 6 continents. We got to 5 continents. And this year we broke the barrier and went to Africa for the first time. And so we have perspectives from South Africa, as well as other new regions we didn't have last time, like Korea, Thailand, the Philippines, Israel, the UAE. So a lot of great perspectives. 14 industries are covered in this, including industries like government. So we're getting perspective from that side of people who do marketing within governments around the world, as well as all the major commercial industries you can think of. But essentially, you know, the shortest thing, State of Marketing is a pulse of marketing leaders, and we think it's the largest pulse of marketing leaders and what they're thinking about their overall marketing strategy, as well as the execution of that strategy across their teams, technology, channels, and campaigns. And because it's in its sixth edition, people can see those insights and how they've changed over time. What technology trends have changed? How's the budget changed? How have teams changed? And there's some new insights in this version that we've never reported on before that we're very excited about that we think a lot of people will find impactful in running their own business.
Chris, so recapping what you said, this year it spanned six continents for the first time. We gathered insights from nearly 7,000 marketing leaders. So the research is very diverse. And I'm sure a lot of marketers out there are probably wondering, if this research was done prior to the pandemic, is it still relevant for me as a marketer? And knowing what you know and the learnings that you found in the report, how is this going to be beneficial for marketers today who are trying to market in this very unique time?
Yeah, it's a very good point because this survey was run in January into early February and with the 7,000 folks around the world. What was interesting as all the COVID-19 impact hit different parts of the world and we were producing this report is that we were looking at the insights and saying, okay, does this have any issue with what we would think would be going on? Because one thing that's important to note with this research, it's done in a first-party way that's double-blind. And basically what that means is that all these people who answer the questions don't know it's Salesforce asking the question, and we don't know it at individual level who answered it. It stops bias on both sides because people might answer questions differently if they know it's Salesforce asking it. And we also, you know, can't be selective in, you know, reporting on responses if we know exactly who the people are who responded. So make sure it's unbiased research and we publish the findings as they are. When we were looking through the findings through February and then March, we realized that most of these things had very little direct impact to what was going on in the wider world. Yes, certain things are changing, but the actual nature of the trend itself spoke more to the uncertainty than it did, you know, a world where everything was certain. It's just that the uncertainty of the moment was a global pandemic as opposed to the usual uncertainty, which is marketing, is what's the next new innovation? What's the next new channel? How am I going to transform the customer experience? How do I incorporate voice or virtual reality? How do I blend online and offline? Now, the budget in terms of how people planned in January might be different, and particularly for certain industries, hospitality, travel, you know, amongst others, it might be severely impacted. And so what we did was we went out to some CMOs and asked them what they thought of these trends and how they would think about changing the budget. And that sort of perspective comes across in the budget trends. So where people say, like, look, this data was compiled in January and it's based on the budget thought of at the start of the year. But these people give insights, impact, saying, like, look, while we might be pausing on advertising now, for example, we are doubling down in areas like content and account-based marketing in B2B because they are super critical for us to keep going and keep our business running. And so those sorts of insights can help other marketers look at what the budget was at the start of the year and take those qualitative insights to think about, well, how is that adapted because of what's going on? But for the most part, you'll realize that they're just universally impactful to a marketer.
Chris, now you mentioned some of the unique questions that were asked this year. Can you share the unique ones that differed from the previous year that you thought were interesting?
Yeah, so what we try and do each year with the questions is try and, one, build on the questions from the prior version of the report, and two, also capture different types of trends that may be going on market that's happened since the last survey, particularly if they've doubled down. You know, there was, you know, it was like a minor trend 2 years ago and it's a bigger trend now. So I mentioned earlier, we asked about budget, and budget's not necessarily obviously a new thing for a marketer, but we know that every time I've certainly gone out and presented this stuff across the world, it's the top first or second question we often get asked. Well, what are people doing as a benchmark for budget in my industry or in B2C or B2B or in my country? And so we asked it in an interesting way where we gave people predefined categories and they talked about their allocation of the budget to that category. And we felt that was the best way to report on that. Another area which was different this time is to talk about teams. Like, often when we've asked questions about teams in the past, it's usually about how people collaborate across departments and how they execute campaigns. But we've never really asked questions about the team itself, the skill set itself. itself. Like, how do the marketing leaders rate the skill set of their teams? And so we wanted to ask this in a unique way. How does the marketing leaders assess their team skills for creativity or data proficiency or data science, emotional intelligence, how they've assessed their coding ability? And so, you know, we report back on that in terms of whether the marketing leader thinks their team is advanced or okay or not advanced across these 9 key categories. So it's a good, you know, pulse check that people can compare the health of their own teams against, you know, some global or other benchmarks around team skills. Another area which I think was also unique this time is we know people obviously execute marketing across channels, but we know the channels are changing. Like, the way someone does email marketing or web marketing today is different to the way they did 2 years ago, let alone 5 or 10 years ago. The interesting thing about that, the answer was almost the same across pretty much every major channel, being that the two primary ways that had changed is through improved audience segmentation and improved personalization. That's the difference between how people were doing email marketing today and the way they were doing that same email marketing yesterday. Same with web, search, community marketing, social marketing, et cetera. And I think that rings true. Like, when you think about it, like, the ability to segment my audience better, something people have got better at because of data. And similarly, they've gotten better at personalization because of both data and then technologies like AI, which has helped them personalize by doing content recommendations or subject line optimization or a better ad targeting or whatever the channel is.
Okay, so Chris, just to summarize here, a lot of work goes into this report. You're constantly thinking of ways that you can improve and questions that you'll be asking that are unique year over year because you want to meet the needs of our ever-evolving marketers. And one of the things that I love about the way that you build this report and that stays tried and true is that you're telling it in a story format. So you break it down into chapters that kind of highlight those key findings. Chris, I'd love for you to go in and just share some of the key highlights.
Yeah, from a broad overview perspective, innovation was a key thing that came across more than anything else. And marketers increasingly leading on customer experience, where a lot of this innovation is. 79% of marketers say they're leading on customer experience across their company. And that was up from 45% last time. And so that's a big jump when you think about it. And that 45% was a big jump from the previous version before that. And so what's interesting about that, I think, is that people go like, well, is innovation really the number one priority in the era that we're in literally right now? And absolutely it is. It's just a different type of innovation. The average marketer may not be transforming the customer experience to include virtual reality right now because that's not their number one priority, but they sure as hell are transforming the experience to deal with the fact that everything is virtual, that there's no events if you're B2B and that's a big part of your selling channel, or there's no way to talk to customer in a retail store in the same way you did before. And so what can you do to overcome that? That's all innovation. So saying it's a number one priority is just a different form of innovation.
Okay, so Chris, just to interrupt you really quick, innovation in an SMB company can be a little bit different. So for instance, we had on the show a few weeks ago where we interviewed a guest who literally in a week, I think, totally revamped their drive-through window so that they can take in guests from their coffee shop. So innovation means a lot of different things. Could you double down on what examples of innovation are?
Yeah. When you give them the options in the survey with innovation, there was a few key things that, you know, listed as examples, obviously things like customer experience transformation, digital transformation, revolutionizing a single experience, i.e. by like bringing a new technology like virtual reality, also changing the way you do business. So changing the nature of the way you sell by market. All of those things were, you know, types of examples that people would look to with opting for innovation. Last year, the number one priority was engaging customers in real time. And that is number two this year. So still up near the top, but not quite number one as it was a year ago. Although engaging with customers in real time was the number one challenge last year, and it still remains the number one challenge globally this year. But these trends differ a lot depending on which region or which industry you talk about. Innovation and engaging with customers in real time are generally near the top, but it does differ, like, depending on which part of the world you're talking to or which industry you're talking to.
Okay, so speaking of industries, wanted to pause here to share the State of Marketing report through the lens of a digital marketer, and she's actually in the retail and consumer goods space. So I thought it would be interesting to just get her take on it. You know, is this resonating with you? Are you seeing anything different? So we brought on Karina Cohen. She's a marketing cloud developer from Caleres. And if you aren't familiar with Caleres, it's a fashion portfolio brand working to make people happy feet first, because they sell a lot of shoes. Get it? Anyways, so some of their well-known brands in their portfolio include Naturalizer, Famous Footwear, and of course, Dr. Scholl's. So here is a short clip from my interview with Karina Cohen about her thoughts on today's state of marketing. So one particular thing I wanted to pick your brain on, we have three different areas we saw specifically for retail where it showed a percentage, actually 77% of marketers are sharing a common goal with sales team. We also have 81% of marketers sharing a common goal with service team. And the third one, 81% of marketers sharing a common goal with e-commerce. So with that, do any of those stand out to you that resonate with you and your experience?
So to see that big of a bump in just a year, it had a smaller bump between 2018 and 2019. So to see a big bump between 2019 and 2020 was really exciting. Although I am really interested to see with the change in the work structure now, if more companies go remote, if that number stays that high for next year.
What do you think, just from your experience, like what do you think attributed to that?
I think it's not only breaking down silos, but we've been hammering in marketing in that it's a 360-degree customer experience. I can do great marketing, but if our customer service team is awful and hangs up on people when they don't want to deal with them, I'm not going to have a return customer and I'm not going to have anybody to market to. If our website is always down, nobody's going to be buying. So what would be the purpose of sending them an email about a new promotion? I mean, we're all one big unit that if we work together seamlessly, our customers have a much better experience. As far as for our team, we have pretty much always worked very closely with e-commerce. Most of the time, our email specialists sat within the e-commerce team for their brand. As far as for services, we have the same common goal of keeping our customers happy, but our service team actually is really good at sales. So we have to compete a little bit. Otherwise, if we have a bad sales week, we've had weeks where our service team has outsold us.
What do you think makes them so good?
Everyone loves shoes. I go and I sit and watch how our customer service team interacts with customers whenever I'm on site in St. Louis. And I can tell you that some of those ladies love those brands as much as I do. So I think it's really easy for them to describe how great our shoes are because they personally use them. I mean, if your team is excited about your brand or excited about your product, it's easy for them to sell.
Okay. Yeah. So on the commerce side, are you doing anything differently now than you maybe did a couple of years ago as far as direct-to-consumer?
Oh, we're even changing from what we did a few months ago. Beginning of this year, Famous Footwear was the only brand that had curbside pickup or BOPIS, buy online, pickup in store. Sam Edelman and Naturalizer, hopefully by the end of June, will also have pickup programs. We're still working on the major metropolitan areas because obviously we don't want you to pull up to a curb in the middle of Soho and back up traffic or chance getting hit. So we're trying to figure out how we go about doing that where our staff and our customers both feel safe. I'm really excited about this BOPIS program. We identified a need and we've worked fast to make it happen. And it's taken the entire company.
What was the hardest part to get it off the ground?
Well, mostly it was getting the technology in place, and that we're still working on, which is why it'll be in June. We've actually been in the process of replatforming all of our e-commerce websites already, so we've had to kind of stop what we were doing for some of those and prioritize which was more important, and then kind of divide so some people are still working on the last few brands that need to roll out while the other team is working on just getting BOPIS out and ready so that we can accommodate for our customers and make sure that they feel safe.
Okay. And back to some of the insights, and I'd love to pick your brain here on the cross-channel coordination. Do you consider yourself in the dynamic section of that cross-channel coordination? Where do you see yourself? And then also, were you surprised with the results from the report?
I would say that we're straddling that and the segment just below the intermediate level. We do a good job sometimes with coordinating, but then there's other times where we could do a little bit better job of targeting and coordinating. I haven't at other companies where all of the different channels just kind of did whatever they want. So we're way ahead of that. But sometimes we'll just take the same imagery, but we won't quite have the same message. So there's a little bit of kind of fine tuning before I would say that we're excellent, but we are definitely A minus solid A material.
Yeah, I think so.
I definitely want to get more like social media and ad studio tied in with Journey Builder before I give us kind of that A plus.
That's an interesting point with the real time. So last year, the top priority and the top challenge was both engaging customers in real time, which seems to be a lot of issue of moving from that duplicated to dynamic phase of cross-channel coordination. This year, the number one top priority and top challenge, at least specifically for retail, is innovation. So do you think that resonates with you?
Oh, definitely. We spent a lot of time last year really auditing all of our programs that were automated and all of their entry sources and either refreshing them, rebuilding them, changing out content if that was all it needed, but really fixing so that everything was as close to real time as we could and as accurate as it could be. We also had a lot of kind of data cleanliness issues that we worked on last year that was causing some of the delay, because if the data wasn't clean coming in, obviously we can't get it out on time. So we've done a lot of work on that. So now we're going to be really leveraging Einstein within our journeys and even creating some engagement journeys this year. We're going to move all of our abandonment emails that are normally just a file drop with a query and then user-initiated send. We're going to change all of those into a journey now and take the same data that's been dropping, but instead do lookup tables and be able to see if maybe there's other ways that we could target them. So maybe instead of waiting 5 days between the initial abandoned cart and your abandoned cart with a promo, we can start targeting you, say, on Facebook, Instagram, social, or with a targeted ad somewhere and really get it out there where it's really kind of cross-channel.
Okay. Yeah. Innovation seems to be a winner.
Yeah. We're looking at leveraging the interactive email features that just came out in the most recent release as well. We're really excited for those.
That's good. That's good. Well, thank you again so much. It was lovely chatting with you and just getting your perspective of your industry and how you've been affected in today's state of marketing. So a couple of key things that I want to point out from that interview, just that resonated with me, and it was the fact that she spoke about the seamless integration between e-commerce marketing and service and how that really allows her to have that better customer experience. Because, I mean, I think we can all agree, no matter what industry you're in, at the end of the day, that's what we all strive for. Now let's get back to the interview with Chris. He's now going to unpack the three core chapters of the State of Marketing report.
The three core chapters are marketing transformation takes on a new urgency. Then we have customer data sets the stage for empathetic marketing. And the third one is marketers double down on business value. And I'll unpack those ones briefly here. Marketing transformation takes on a new urgency. This talks about how marketers are working with other parts of the organization. One interesting finding that came out of this area is that 72% of marketers say they're aligned with their IT department. Now, that's a good thing. The interesting thing with that, though, we've obviously done research of IT departments too and other research at Salesforce. IT leaders say insufficient alignment with other teams is their number one challenge. So maybe marketers are known to be optimistic. Maybe they are being optimistic here. But if you think about a lot of things that are happening when it comes to marketing transformation and technology, it requires marketing and IT to be on the same page. And so hopefully that 72% number is reflective of what IT thinks, because if they're in conflict, that prohibits a lot of things from happening. The good news is when we talk about collaboration, marketing are collaborating and sharing goals and metrics with e-commerce teams. That's 80% in 2020, up from 50% 2 years ago, 81% with sharing goals and metrics with sales teams. That's up from 52% 2 years ago, and 80% as well with customer service teams sharing goals and metrics, up from 53% 2 years ago. So it seems like at least across the key departments who marketing commonly works with, they're working towards the same goal. The other thing that's good in terms of marketing transformation is now 53% of marketing leaders report that their cross-channel coordination is dynamic. Dynamic basically means that if something happens in one channel, it's reflected in another. For example, if I get an email it has an offer and I take advantage of that promo offer, that I don't see the same offer on the web, because the web has recognized that I took advantage of the offer in an email or in an ad. And so just 53% of marketers saying they're now doing dynamic cross-channel coordination. That's great to see, because that number was 31% in our last state of marketing report. So it's grown a lot.
Just looking at the different industries, but also just the general report of like the percentages of dynamic, duplicated, and siloed, are those broken down by segment too? Like, do you see a difference across a enterprise level brand versus a smaller business?
Yes, there are. And so this is the interesting thing, that I think when you look at the data by those types of segments, like large company and small company or middle market size company, you start to see how the different challenges they face. And so, yes, you might have something like an enterprise company has a lot more resources at its disposal than a smaller company, but an enterprise company also has to deal with a lot more issues in trying to coordinate channels than a smaller company does. I find it really fascinating with these sorts of trends. This is my favorite thing, and both of you know this to different degrees, is actually going out and talking to people about it and then hearing their opinions back. Because the best thing about data is that you show it and then everyone has an opinion.
Exactly.
And it differs wildly depending on which part of the world you're in, mm-hmm. and which industry you're talking to. And I find that stuff fascinating.
Me too, man.
So that's marketing transformation takes on a new urgency. The second core chapter, customer data, sets the stage for empathetic marketing. I think the interesting thing that we see here is that data in and of itself doesn't really matter, right? Like, you have data, so what? Like, it's what you do with it that really matters. And yes, there's a lot of challenges with data, but ultimately it's that whole thing of, yes, capturing the data, but then using it. And so in the world we're in right now, not just because we're in a global pandemic, but in general, customers have higher expectations they've ever had before. Marketers are reporting that, you know, between 2019 and 2021, so last year to next year, they expect this a 50% growth in the amount of data that they're using to run their campaigns. That's a massive change to deal with, because that might mean a lot of different technologies they have to integrate in a very short space of time. But the thing is, to be able to use that data at the level of scale of that growth, you really need to use technologies like AI. There's no human that can, you know, do that. You need technology to do that. And the go-to technology has been AI for the last few years. And the growth rate of AI adoption from the marketing department is 186% from the last report.
What?
And, you know, yeah, it's massive. I mean, it was a massive number last time, and it's grown exponentially this time. But at the same time, when we talk about data and we talk about AI, and only 30% of marketing leaders say they're completely satisfied with the ability to balance personalization with customer comfort. And so while there's all this good news of growth of AI and access to more data to manage to get a better view of our customers, this balance of personalization and customer comfort is certainly not at any great heights. And so that's the challenge of what's coming ahead.
I had a quick question on just on the note of data sources. When looking through the industry profile lens again, the one that stood out to me the most was media and entertainment. They had 12 data sources in 2019 and predicted in 2021 to have 20, which is like way more than a lot of the other ones. Do you have just any thought of like how and why do they have so many data sources in media and entertainment?
Yeah, it's interesting. If I was to guess, the media and entertainment space, one, they're going through probably a greater rate of transformation right now than others. When you think of technologies like OTT in the entertainment space, entertainment use technologies like virtual reality and augmented reality far more than others. And so thus, the access to different data sources that exist there aren't yet. They will be prevalent in other industries, but they're just not there yet. And that could be what's fueling a lot of that growth in data. Also, entertainment is one of the marketers or brands that are usually at the forefront of pushing the edge on things. They're usually amongst the first companies to adopt new and transformative technologies. They adopted voice first before others did. I mean, if you only look at the trends in things like gaming, which are a subpart of entertainment, I mean, they are doing things that other industries may be 5 to 10 years away from trying out. So that might be what's fueling the fact that they're using a greater amount of data on average, and thus also been using AI on that data to make predictions to optimize the customer experience. But that's not to say that others won't follow soon enough, because, you know, our competitor is not just our people in our industry, it's everybody.
Yeah, that's good insight there. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Spend a lot of time thinking about this, Megan. And then the final chapter is marketers double down on business value. Obviously, during, you know, a recessionary type environment that we are all in, no matter where in the world we reside, business value is important. Now, to deliver on business value, you need data to make decisions to then optimize the campaigns that you're running. So one of the interesting findings we found was that about 72% of high-performing marketers get and can analyze their performance in real time, but only 49% of underperforming marketers, and in this case, high-performing marketers have access to their performance in real time, but underperformers don't to anywhere near the same degree. And obviously, if you have performance in real time, you can optimize in real time or near real time, and thus, you know, you can achieve performance or double down on business value, as we say. The other thing that's interesting is this prevalence of influencer marketing. Influencer marketing didn't even register as one of the higher ROI channels last time we asked. But if you look at our report, basically across all stages of the customer lifecycle, whether it's branding, lead gen, retention, et cetera, influencer marketing is prevalent and being one of the highest ROI channels for brands. I think we're all consumers of this, you know, whether you're on Instagram or other types of channels, there's certain people we trust and those people have built careers on that. The age of the influencer is here, and, you know, brand marketers are saying these are amongst their highest ROI channels for, you know, areas like branding or customer acquisition, upselling, etc. And so it shows how important something has become in such a short space of time.
Now, I hope that gave you a nice sneak peek into the State of Marketing report. I was really excited to learn about the key highlights there. And one thing that we wanted to add in to wrap up this episode was talk about a piece of the report that was kind of cheeky, a little fun. It's taking into account that we're in a new decade. And in the final chapter of this report, it asks the marketers, hey, what's going to be happening 10 years from now? What are your predictions? So Chris and I and Tina were all joking, and we, you know, we were thinking, so is marketing going to be run by a bunch of robots? Who knows?
We could be. Let's hope we're not sitting at home just constantly on Zoom or Hangout calls in 2029 and 2030. And the interesting thing about this question is that it could differ greatly depending on where, particularly where you sit in the world. Because, you know, certain countries are at a certain point in their evolution versus others. And, you know, with this broader spectrum of 29 different regions of the world that we've got answers on, it, you know, people are just at different points. You know, what's going on in the UAE and South Africa is fundamentally different than what's going on in Brazil or Canada or France. And so, like, that type of pulse of, like, looking at 10 years, it differs. And then also can differ across industries. The interesting thing is the most transformative technology of the next 10 years for marketing was 5G. Because I think when people think about 5G, think about what it is. It's just faster speeds. And if you have faster speeds, it means you can do virtual reality more realistic, because that requires a lot of bandwidth. And so 5G is almost like one of those technologies that enables other technologies. It could enable things like blockchain to become more of a reality for marketers. It helps with voice or smart homes or smart cars, all these other transformative technologies that will have some impact or maybe huge impact on marketing in the next 10 years. But having faster speeds allows those other things to then happen, and it will change the way we do things. Just like broadband generally changed what we did, you know, versus the early internet era of dial-up. The other area which was interesting that came up on top is on a technological change was expanded online population. Basically meaning, you know, half the world is online at the moment, you know, 3.5 billion people, give or take. What happens in the next 10 years when most of the other 3.5 billion people who are not online come online? And that's an untapped market for so many companies in so many industries, because they just have no real easy way to reach them. And suddenly, if you're addressable market just doubles in the space of 10 years, what does that mean for your business? Whoever wins the day with those new customers will be the businesses of tomorrow, and who doesn't, you know, may not be here anymore when we're at the end of the decade. So it was those two things that came to the top. And to me, you know, seeing the results as it came in, it's like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, you've got all these new people that are going to be potential new customers, you know, billions of them by the end of the decade. And this new technology that's going to transform the way that we deliver everything just because it's going to make everything faster.
Now, Chris, where can people actually download this report?
If you want to access this report, just go to salesforce.com/state of marketing. And you'll be able to download it for free there. You know, it'll be a virtual road for a while, but hopefully we'll see you, you know, talking about the trends that are applicable to your region or to your industry or to your size of business, and, you know, go deeper with you either in groups or even in smaller rooms with just you and your account team. So very excited about this and look forward to talking about it more.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to this episode and learning more about the 6th edition of our State of Marketing Report.
Yeah, and I mean, I personally learned a lot of things, but one of the things that stuck out to me was, number one, that influencer marketing is the new top priority for marketers, and also just the increase in AI over time, and especially within this last year.
We hope you found this insightful as we unpacked the State of Marketing Insights report. The link to the report can be downloaded in our description. Hope everyone continues to stay safe and well. We'll talk to you soon.
Now, if you enjoyed the show, go ahead and subscribe, be inspired, and become a trailblazer. You can check us out on marketingcloudcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Thanks to our editing partners at Think Ahead Studios, Salesforce Studios, and audible.com. Talk to you soon.